And welcome to Shir Ramban Parsha Shoftim. Towards the end of the Sedra, in Perek Chaf Pasuk Yud, the beginning of Shvi'i, we read, Ki sikrav el ir lehilachem aleha, when you draw close to a city to wage war against it, v'karasa eleha l'shalom. You should first reach out to that city to see if they want to make peace. It will come to be if the people of that city respond by saying they want to make peace and they open up the city to you. So then the people there will become subjugated to you, they will serve you, but you'll make peace with them. If the city refuses to make peace with you, and they wage war against you, so then you should go to war against that city, and ultimately, Be'ezus Hashem, the pasuk goes on to say that you'll be victorious. What's the nature of the war which is being described here in the pasuk? So Rashi writes in Pasuk Yud, Ki sikrav el ir, when you come close to a city, b'molchemes harishus hakasuv medaber. What we're talking about here in this Pasuk is an optional war, a voluntary war. K'moshe mefurash b'inyon keng tasel chol ha'orim harichokos. Indeed, that's what the Pasuk itself says. A few psukim later, says Rashi, we skip forward to Pasuk Tesvav, Kain tase l'chol ha'orim ha'rechokos mimcha me'od, asher lo me'ori ha'goyim ha'ele heina. This procedure should be followed for all of the cities that are very far away from you. Namely, those cities which don't belong to the nations that inhabit Eretz Yisrael. Rak me'ore ha'amim ha'ele asher Hashem lokecha nosin l'chol nachala. However, when it comes to the cities of the nations that Hashem is giving to you as an inheritance, i.e. the seven nations that inhabit Eretz Yisrael, with regard to them, lo sechaya kol neshama. You have to utterly destroy those cities, not even leaving a single soul alive. So the way Rashi understands those psukim is that the Torah's mandate that when about to wage war against the city, one should first see if the city or the country, whatever it happens to be, is open to making peace, that only applies to a Melchemes HaRishus. If someday the Jewish kingdom in Eretz Yisrael decides that it's going to wage war against a foreign country for whatever reason, there, instead of simply going to war, the first step should always be to make peace and try to settle the differences in that particular way. However, when it comes to a Melchemes Mitzvah, when it comes to a mitzvah-ordained kind of war, namely like the kind of war that Yoshua engaged in when he entered into Eretz Yisrael and conquered the Shiva Amamim, the seven nations who had inhabited Eretz Yisrael, so there is no concept of first giving them the offer of peace. There's a mitzvah to eradicate the Shiva Amamim, and there's no step one. You go straight to step two and engage in war. That's Rashi's position, as outlined over here. So the Ramban comments on this as follows. He quotes Rashi. Kosav harav zem is sifri. So Rashi says the Ramban is working off of a sifri of the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Dvarim. Sheshanu sham kaloshen hazeh. So there in the sifri writes b'molchemes harishus hakosav medaber. The sifri writes those four words which began Rashi's comment. Namely, that this discussion pertains to a Melchemes HaRishus, to an optional war. However, says the Ramban, in his opinion, Rashi did not correctly understand that Sifri. And he goes on to say as follows. V'akavon, l'rabu seinu b'kosev hazeh, eino el olomar sharparsho b'sofa t'chalek ben shnei ha'melchomos. Says the Ramban, what Chazal mean in the Sifri is as follows. There clearly is a difference between a Melchemes Mitzvah, between a war which is a mitzvah to wage, such as the war against the Shiva Amamim against the seven nations inhabiting Eretz Yisrael. And a Mochemes HaRishul is an optional war, a voluntary war that Klal Yisrael go to. But what is that distinction? That distinction is what the Psukim go on to say a little bit later, like we quoted a few moments before. Namely, when it comes to a Mochemes HaRishul, when it comes to a voluntary war, so the mandate that we have is to attack the males. However, Rak Hanoshim V'Hatafa HaBehema, Pasuk Yudalid, the women, the children, the animals, V'chol Asher Yeh Bo'ir Koshla Lo Tovoz Loch. So, you know, the women and children are left alive. The livestock and the other property of the city is taken as spoils. V'yochal Toshla Lo Yvecha Asher Nosan Hashem Elokech Aloch. And you will consume and conquer the spoils of your enemies. That's when it comes to Mochemes HaRishus. When it comes to Mochemes Mitzvah, when it comes to an obligatory war like that of the eradication of the Shiva Amim, of the seven nations, there, Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama, there, you don't leave anyone alive, even the women, even the children, and they're utterly destroyed. Ki Hachreim Tachrimim, you have to destroy them utterly. So that's the distinction between Mochemes HaRishus and Mochemes Mitzvah. That's what the Sifri means to say, that Mochemes HaRishus HaKos of Medaber, that this parsha, that, you know, that distinction is talking about Mochemes HaRishus specifically. However, continues the Ramban, about Kriyas HaShalom, but the first thing which is spoken about in this parsha, namely, that the first step before entering into war is to first give the opportunity of making peace, that afilu b'mochemes mitzvahi, that says the Ramban, applies even with a war that's a mochemes mitzvah, an obligatory war. Shechayovin l'krol l'shalom afilu l'shiva amimin. Even before engaging in war with the seven nations, there's still an obligation to seek out, to give them the opportunity to make peace. How do we know that? Sharei Moshe karo l'shalom l'sichon melech ha'amori. At the end of Parshas Chukas, when Moshe encounters Sichon, the king of the Amori, remember, the Amori are one of the seven nations. Moshe Rabbeinu first sends messengers to Sichon, trying to seek peace. V'lo hoya over alasei v'lo saseh shebeparsha. Certainly Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have violated what the Torah over here is saying. According to Rashi, it seems like Moshe Rabbeinu was in violation of this prohibition of Kriyas Shalom, of seeking peace with the Shiva Amimin. The only difference, goes on the Ramban to say, between the Shiva Amimin, the seven nations in Eretz Yisrael, and the nations outside of Eretz Yisrael, is this distinction we spoke about before. Is there a mandate to utterly eradicate them, men, women, and children? That's the Shiva Amimin. Or can there be a distinction made between the men who are the fighters and the women and children that it pertains to the people, to the nations outside of the Shiva Amimin? But everyone deserves a chance. Everyone, even the Shiva Amimin, deserve a chance to make peace before Klal Yisrael goes to war. The Ramban continues to support this idea that there's a mitzvah to seek out peace even before engaging in war with the Shiva Amimin. And he quotes a passage in the Yerushalmi from Masechta Shviyas, which may be familiar to many of us. The passage over there says, Omer Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Nachmeni, Yoshua ben Nun kiyem haparsha hazo. Yoshua ben Nun, when he went into Eretz Yisrael, fulfilled the dictates of this parsha. What's this parsha? This parsha that says, V'karasa ileho l'shalom, that you have to seek out the peace. You have to seek out peace from the people that you're looking to make a war against before you engage them in war. Ma also Yehoshua, what did Yehoshua do before he went into Eretz Yisrael? Hoya sholeach prusti gatma b'chol makom shehoya holech lichbosh. He sent out letters to every place that he was looking to conquer. You know, he sent out tweets, whatever it was. V'hoya kosev ba, in these letters it would say, Mishemevakesh lahashlim, Yavo v'yashlim. If somebody wants to make peace with us, here we are the Jews, we're coming into Eretz Yisrael, we're going to fight, we're going to take over Eretz Yisrael. If you want to make peace with us, gesundheit, please make peace. Mishmevakesh leilechlo, yeilechlo. Somebody who's interested in leaving, gesundheit, you can leave. Mishmevakesh lasos milchama, yase milchama. But if you don't want to do either of those two things, you want to fight us, So by all means, feel free to find us, and we're going to defeat you. HaGirgashi Pana, as we mentioned yesterday, the Girgashi took Yoshua's words to heart, and they left Eretz Yisrael. HaGivonu Shishlimu Asa Lahem Yoshua Shalom. The Givonim, as described in Sefer Yehoshua, made peace with Yehoshua. Shloshim ve'echad malachim shibor lilachim v'pilum HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The other 31 kings who were in Eretz Yisrael chose to fight. And as we know, Yoshua ultimately conquered them with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here this Yerushalmi also portrays Yehoshua as giving the opportunity to the nations within Eretz Yisrael to make peace with the conquering armies of the Jews. Again, according to Rashi, it seems that that shouldn't have been an option which could have been made to them altogether. Obviously, this Yerushalmi is a strong kasha against Rashi. It seems to undermine Rashi's position altogether. Some Achronim explain, in explaining Rashi, that there might be different standards before the Jews enter into Eretz Yisrael versus once the Jews enter into Eretz Yisrael. In other words, when Yoshua is still on the eastern side of the Jordan before he comes in, so the obligation to make war has not set in yet. So at that point, he can send to those nations in Eretz Yisrael and give them the opportunity of shalom. The Mochemes Mitzvah, however, becomes an obligation once he crosses over the Jordan. And at that point already, if the nations have not yet taken up the offer of Yehoshua to make peace, they've lost the window of opportunity, according to Rashi. Whereas according to the Ramban, it sounds like that window of opportunity for the nations to make shalom is in place until they proactively reject the offer of Yehoshua to make peace. You know, so that's one way perhaps to explain the position of Rashi. The Ramban goes on to support his position even further. V'nira sheyesh hefresh od b'she'elas shalom she'ba'arim harachokos nishalu hem l'shalom v'shiyu lorun l'mas v'yavdunu aval ba'arei ha'amim ha'ela nishalu hem l'shalom u'misim v'avdus al'menas sheyikablu aleim shelo lavod avodazara. Says the Ramban, it would seem that there's another distinction between this Shiva Amamin, the seven nations within Eretz Yisrael, and the nations outside of Eretz Yisrael, even though in both cases, according to the Ramban, the obligation is, before engaging them to war, to first give them the opportunity of having peace. What does it mean to embrace peace for the nations outside of Eretz Yisrael? So basically peace, says the Ramban, means servitude. Right, servitude for peace. That's the motto, right? Unless if you agree to be subservient to us, so then we'll make peace with you. Those are the peace treaties. What's your religious life like? That's your business. You know, we're not getting involved in that. But within the Shiva Amamin, the seven nations that inhabit Eretz Yisrael, says the Ramban, the offer of peace comes with an additional caveat. You can choose to make peace with us, the conquering Jewish armies, and clearly if you do so, you'll be subservient to us. But part of the deal, says the Ramban, is that you, the seven nations who inhabit Eretz Yisrael, have to give up Avodah Zarah. You have to give up idolatry. And certainly, you know, if you go back over the Psukim, this week's Parashah Re'eh, and the other Psukim in Chumash, we well understand why the Ramban would say such a thing. The Psukim consistently talk about that the Avodah Zarah of the nations who inhabited Eretz Yisrael before the Jews has the potential to ensnare the Jews entering into Eretz Yisrael. So certainly it would be important. We understand why Rashi says that there is no possibility of making peace with the nations within Eretz Yisrael. They're so devoted to their Avodah Zarah that their very presence would ensnare and trap the Jewish people in a spiritual sense. But even the Ramban, who acknowledges that there's a concept of making peace, there's a possibility of making peace with the nations who inhabit Eretz Yisrael, but that peace has to come with a firm understanding that they're renouncing Avodah Zarah. Below Hizkir HaKosav Zeh B'Parasha Hazos, true, the Torah doesn't mention that idea explicitly here. Shekvar Nesar Lano Be'ovdei Avodah Zarah Lo Yeshvu Be'Artzecha Pen Yachatiu O'Secha Li Kisa Avodah Eloheim. The reason it isn't mentioned over here is because back in Sefer Shmos we were told that those who worship Avodah Zarah are not allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael. Again, when we have that kind of control over Eretz Yisrael, why? Because they will ensnare the Jewish people and get them in turn to worship Avodah Zarah. So it's so obvious that part of the peace treaty would have to involve the renouncing of Avodah Zarah on the part of the Shiva Amimin, the seven nations inhabiting Eretz Yisrael, that it doesn't even need to be said. V'itochen shelo nitzarech lehodi alohem rak hashalom v'amisim v'hashibud v'acharei shiyu mishubodim lonu nagid lohem sh'anu osim mishpatim v'avodah zarah v'ovdeha bein biyochid bein rabim. Ramban suggests there might be another reason why it's not mentioned here in the parasha, because it's not a part of the peace treaty per se. In other words, when we enter into these peace negotiations with the Shiva Amimin, the seven nations inhabiting Eretz Yisrael, we basically tell them, look, you know, we have God on our side, we definitely have the wherewithal to conquer you. So you can make peace with us, and peace means that you'll be subservient to us. They say, fine, where do we sign? We'll sign over here. Okay, so they go off to Camp David, and they sign a treaty. All is good with the world. And then after the treaty is signed, says the Ramban, at some later point, we have the right to say to them, by the way, our laws include the idea that you're not allowed to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, to worship Avodah Zarah, even if you're a non-Jew. Isn't that sneaky? What, you signed the contract, and then you stuck in this clause a little bit later on? So I suspect the Ramban would say, it's not sneaky at all, it's not underhanded at all. What does servitude mean? And servitude doesn't just mean that you'll get me a cup of lemonade. Servitude means that you agree to abide by whatever laws we are going to put forward in the future. One of these laws, which we don't have to talk about right at the beginning, but one of these laws is the prohibition against Avodah Zarah. U'masechet Sota Omru Shekosvu HaTorah Al Ho'avonim V'Shivim Loshon V'Kosvu L'mata L'man Asher Lo Yilamdu Eschem La'asos Ho'im Osu Tshuva Mekablim Osam. A further proof, says the Ramban, for this idea that the Kriya L'Shalom, that the offer of peace, is something that's supposed to be extended even to the Shiva Amimin. The Sukkim talk about how there were these stones that were set up in Eretz Yisrael after the Jews crossed over the Yarden, or after they crossed over the Jordan River. And on these stones, the Torah was written in 70 different languages. Clearly the point of writing the Torah in 70 different languages was to enable all of the nations to be able to read the Torah. And there, at the bottom of the stones, it was written, L'mana shalo yilamdu eschem la'asos. Right? This should ensure that the non-Jewish inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael are not going to teach you to follow Avodah Zarah. Look, here we are teaching them about the laws of the Torah by putting the Torah out there in 70 different languages in translation. The Rashi Pirei Shom, Rashi there in Soto, Daf Lamed Heyom and Beis writes, Lo'odia lo'umos hayoshvim chutz migvulam shel Eretz Yisrael shelo nitztavu lacharimo aval lo'osam shebesocha gvulin kedei shelo yilamdu eschem osa maisa kilkulam aval osam hayoshvim chutz lo omrim lohem im atem chozrim b'tshuva nekabel eschem v'shebesocha ein mekabelin osan shemachmas yirohem osim. Says Rashi, in interpreting that Gemara in Sota, who is the audience of these stones? So Rashi writes over there, interestingly, that the audience of these stones are the expats, the former non-Jewish inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael, who find themselves living elsewhere. And those, let's say, Knanim, who find themselves living elsewhere, are supposed to be informed by the writing on these stones of the words of Torah, and basically told that if they renounce their Avodah Zarah, they can come back to Eretz Yisrael and be accepted. However, the nations the majority of those nations who were living in Eretz Yisrael at the time that Yoshua comes into Eretz Yisrael, Rashi consistently in Sota writes that they're not given the chance of accepting a peace treaty. They're not given the chance of doing tshuva. They have to be utterly destroyed, says Rashi in Sota. Again, Rashi in Sota is consistent with what he writes on Chumash, namely that the opportunity for tshuva and shalom and all these wonderful things is not extended to the seven nations inhabiting Eretz Yisrael. The only hope of tshuva is for a Kna'ani who finds himself, you know, living in Paris or something like that, and has the opportunity perhaps of coming back to Eretz Yisrael at some later point as an individual. Ve'eino nochon, says the Ramban, I don't think that's correct at all. Ki be'orei ho'amim ho'eile, asher Hashem elokecha nosein l'cho nachlo, asher Hashem elokecha nosein l'cho nachlo, bohem omar, l'man asher lo yilamdu eschem, shim osu tshuvo ene ne'erogin, v'chein omar bohem lo yeshvu ba'artzuchov, hem yachatiu osucho li, ki sabur es Eloheyem, ho im ozvu es Eloheyem, utorim leshev shom. Says the Ramban, it doesn't seem logical to him that the whole purpose of these stones would be to open a door for tshuva exclusively for those former non-Jewish residents of Eretz Yisrael who are now living elsewhere. If you want, you can do tshuva and come back and be accepted into the land of Israel. But, you know, the stones have no relevance for all of the masses of non-Jewish members of the Shiva Amamim, of the seven nations who are currently living in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ramban, it doesn't sound right. The stones are meant for the people who are living there now, and if that's the case, so there is a possibility of tshuva for the current inhabitants, there is a possibility of shalom for the current inhabitants, not as Rashi, according to the Ramban, has to twist himself into saying that we're talking about those people who are, again, expats, people who lived in Eretz Yisrael but are now living elsewhere. It's interesting to know, Tosfos in Masechet Sota also disagrees with the Rashi there. So this Machlokas Rashi in Tosfos and Sota is very reminiscent, really follows the same lines as the Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban over here. Again, is there an opportunity afforded the seven nations inhabiting Eretz Yisrael to do tshuva, to renounce Avodah Zarah, to accept peace terms before Yoshua comes in? The Ramban and Tosfos and Sota, and we should add the Rambam in his Mishneh Torah, all take that position that shalom and tshuva are an option, which are extended to the seven nations inhabited in Eretz Yisrael. And again, had they said, we accept peace terms, and we accept to renounce Avodah Zarah, the whole Sefer Yehoshua might have been different in terms of what ended up happening. Continues the Ramban, v'zeho inyan she'osa ha-melech Shlomo, she'kosav bo, v'zeh dvar ha-masa she'helo ha-melech Shlomo, livnos yisbeis Hashem, yisbeiso v'yishamilo, yischomas Yerushalayim, kol ha'om, hanosar min ho'emori achiti, haprizi achivi v'yevusi, b'neim asher nosru achareim ba'aretz asher lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael achrimom, v'yalim shlolo lomas oved, ad hayom hazeh. Sefer Melachim describes how Shlomo HaMelech, who certainly consolidated a tremendous amount of control and power over Eretz Yisrael, impressed into service descendants of some of the Shiva Amamim, some of the seven nations who had not been killed when Yoshua entered into Eretz Yisrael. They were still, again that's what the Pasuk says, there were still remnants of five nations, the Amori, the Chiti, the Prizi, the Chivi, and the Yevusi. There were still remnants, descendants of these nations who were present in Eretz Yisrael still at the time of Shlomo. And Shlomo HaMelech impressed them into service on behalf of the kingdom. So says the Ramban, so was Shlomo HaMelech right in doing that? According to Rashi, it would appear that Shlomo HaMelech was in violation of, you know, in doing such a thing. You know, there's a mitzvah, ki hachareim tacharimim, there's a mitzvah to annihilate these nations entirely. How could you take people from these nations and push them into working for the kingdom? Rashi's response to that might be that Shlomo was not acting in accordance with halacha in doing that. It's a possibility. But certainly, on the surface, we would assume that Shlomo was acting in accordance with halacha, and as such, it supports, once again, the Ramban's contention that the possibility of tshuva and shalom is something which is extended to these nations and the descendants of these nations many, many years into the future. V'ho'inyon hazeh katoro aso'o ki kiblu alem sheva mitzvos. It certainly makes sense that what Shlomo did was in accordance with Torah law, namely that these individuals, these groups, accepted upon themselves the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. They accepted not to worship Avodah Zarah, and as such, this was an appropriate thing for him to do. V'davar barur hu ki kevon shenostam Shlomo osei melachto gavur yado alev yochal hoya lacharimam. Certainly, it stands to reason that had he wanted to, Shlomo HaMelech could have just rid the country of these individuals. But obviously he chose not to, and his choice not to was in accordance with halacha. So you have this position, which again is major Rishonim, Tosfos, the Rambam, all of whom who say that even the Shiva Amimim were depicted throughout Chumash as being depraved, as being people who epitomized the being sunk in the mire of Avodah Zarah, of Gilui Arayos, you know, not nice people by any stretch of the imagination, even they are theoretically redeemable. Even they can be offered an offer of peace. Even they, in theory, can do tshuva. And perhaps that's, you know, there's a nice Musar lesson for us to take away from this as we head into the month of Elul. In the very, very near future, everybody's redeemable. Even the Shiva Amimim, even the seven nations with all the terrible things that the Torah has to say about them, even they should be offered shalom. Even they can be given an opportunity to do tshuva. Even they may take up the opportunity to do tshuva. Alach haskama v'kama, how much more so for us that we have that opportunity, and certainly that we should seize that opportunity.